It works. So, first of all, good morning, everybody, and I would like to thank the organizers for inviting me here in this very beautiful place. And I'm going to show you some results from 2D numerical models of the Crab Nebula, and I will focus in particular on the problem of particle acceleration. And these results have been obtained in collaboration with Luca Del Zanna, Elena Amato, Niccolò Bucciantini, and Rino Bandiera. As we saw before, the PWN are powered by the young neutron stars in the center of the remnant that lose its energy in the form of a relativistic magnetized and cold wind. This wind is mainly composed by electron-positron pairs, and possibly it also has a small amount of hadrons, and its observational property is that it cannot be observed, since it appears as as a subluminous area in the center of the remnant. And this is the main reason why we actually need numerical simulations to investigate the physics which is going in inside the wind. So the first thing to do to build our numerical model is to define the wind model, the model for the pulsar wind. And from the literature, we know that the wind is supposed to have an anisotropic distribution of the energy flux, which should be mainly concentrated in the equatorial plane, which makes the termination shock to assume this oblate shape with an equatorial radius which is much bigger than the polar one. The level of the anisotropy of the wind can be governed by this parameter alpha, which must be chosen to be much less than one. We also know that the wind is supposed to have a strike morphology within an equatorial belt of extension of about two times the angle between the rotational axis of the pulsar and the x-magnetic axis. And we can so define the magnetic field in such a way in which the sigma is the initial wind magnetization and B is the width of the strike zone. If we choose different values of these two parameters, we change essentially the shape of the effective magnetization of the wind, and in particular the strike zone, which is this one and this one here, became wider for smaller values of B. These three parameters, alpha, B, and sigma, are the three parameters of our numerical model. Okay. Once we have defined the model for the pulsar wind, we can let the system evolve up to the time of the actual age of the object we are looking for. In the case of the crab, we have to simulate about 1,000 years. Once we have the simulated object, we can obtain synthetic information about the object itself, so we can obtain emission maps and integrated spectra, and so on. And we can then compare these results with observation properties. And from this comparison, we can find the best fit of the three parameters of our model to fit the object we are looking for. And in the case of the crab, we know that from 2D simulations, this is the best set for fit the high energy morphology of the crab nebula. The problem of particle acceleration in pulsar wind nebula is one of the most recent problem, because we actually know that PWN are among the most powerful accelerators in nature, and we also know that there is evidence for PEV electrons, but we also know that acceleration takes place in a very hostile environment for acceleration, which is the relativistic magnetized shock of the pulsar wind. Mainly two different mechanisms have been proposed to be at work in the case of the termination shock of the Crab Nebula, which are Fermi 1 acceleration and driven magnetic reconnection. In the first case, we can Fermi 1 acceleration accounts for the correct slope of the high energy spectrum of the Crab Nebula, but it also requires very low magnetization to be efficient at these relativistic shocks. On the other hand, driven magnetic reconnection can account for the slope of the low energy emission component of the spectrum, but it requires high magnetic values of the magnetization and of the pulsar pair multiplicity. And both these requirements are very hard to be can work at the entire surface of the shock, but they maybe can work only in small sectors around the shock itself. A possible way to investigate the particle acceleration mechanism is to use WISP, since they originate so close to the termination shock surface. The main thing we have to notice are these two. From MHD models, we know that WISP appear to trace the underlying flow properties. And the second thing is that from observation, we know that WISP are seen at different wavelengths, and they also show different properties. In particular, they are different in positions, and also they show slightly different outward velocities. In the case of an MHD description, the fact that WISP arise at different wavelengths seems to point that the particle responsible of these emissions are accelerated at different sectors of the shock. And this also might indicate that the acceleration mechanisms for these different properties are different. We thus perform a sort of multi-wavelength analysis of the WISP properties from our simulations. And in particular, we investigate the properties of the observed WISP from the simulated data by injecting the emitting particles at different sectors around the shock surface. In particular, we consider these three different hypotheses. In the first one, we inject particles along the entire surface of the shock, so we expect to have a uniform distribution of the inject particles. In the second case, we define an equatorial zone, which is this one in yellow here, and the opposite polar one, which is narrow, this one. And in the last case, we consider a narrow equatorial zone, which is this one in green, and the opposite wide polar one. To obtain the emission properties, we consider two different particle families, one responsible for the low energy emission, so for radio emission, and one for the high energy emission. The optical emission is then obtained as a mixed contribution of these two families, as we can see here from the fitting of the spectra. Our data sample is computed at the end of the simulation time in the case of the Crab Nebula, during a time of about 10 years, with a Monty frequency. And following the analysis by Svazer et al. In 2013, we extrapolate the intensity profiles of WISPs by using this slice in the upper hemisphere of each intensity map of the different wavelength. Our results are shown as the radial position of the intensity maxima of the WISPs in function of the time expressed in months. As we expect from an MHD modeling, what we found is that in the case of the uniform injection, WISPs appear to be coincident at all the different wavelengths we are considering, so at X-ray, radio, and optical frequencies. This is no more the case when we inject particles in different sectors. Here, in particular, we are injecting particles in the wide equatorial zone and in the narrow polar one. The first thing to notice is that when we inject particles in the polar sector, which are light blue crosses and yellow stars, basically we have no WISP structure, but we only obtain this quasi-stationary structure here near to 5 arc seconds from the pulsar, which is not observed in the reality. The other case, on the other hand, show a quasi-identical behavior of the uniform injection case. And the most important thing is that under this hypothesis, it's impossible to inject radio and X-ray particles in different sectors in order to have no coincident WISPs. So the final possibility is that we inject particles in a narrow equatorial zone or in the polar one, or in a wider polar one. In this case, we see that WISPs appear both at radio and X-ray frequencies in both the possible cases of injection. The stronger constraint we have to define which is the most interesting possibility in this analysis comes from Schweizer et al. 2013, in which they do not see X-ray wisps within about 6 arcseconds from the pulsar. And the only case in which we can reproduce this behavior is the one in which we inject X-ray particles only in the equatorial zone. On the other hand, the case of radio emission is much more complicated to be constrained, since wisps appear in both the cases and they seem to have very similar properties. And the only thing we can say now is that in order to have radio wisp not coincident with X-ray 1, we must inject particles responsible for such emission or in the opposite sector, so in this white polar sector, or maybe in a wider equatorial zone, which is not completely coincident with that one, so like in this area. For this case, we also compute the outward velocities of wisps, and we obtain a range which is in good agreement with observations. So, in conclusion, we found that this multi-wavelength analysis of the wisp properties allow us to constrain where the particles must be accelerated in order to reproduce observations. In particular, we can constrain the zone in which X-ray particles must be accelerated, which is the narrow equatorial zone, which we can think is to be the one in which the wind is striped, and so the one in which the magnetization is lower, and possibly lower enough to be compatible with Fermi 1 acceleration requirements. On the other hand, radio particles must be injected in an opposite polar sector or in a wider one, and we can think that in some zone of these sectors, the conditions for driven magnetic reconnection to be at work might be locally satisfied. Just a few words on the perspective of these simulations. We know that in the past, 2D simulations have been very efficient to reproduce many of the observed properties of PWN, in particular accounting for the high energy emission morphology, but also they leave some open problems. Maybe the solution is going to 3D modelization of this object, and the first simulation, 3D simulation of the Crab Nebula was made recently by Port et al., and they show that it seems to solve some of the open problems, but also they can only reproduce a very small part of the Crab Nebula evolution age, and it is too short for a complete evaluation of the emission properties of the crab. At the moment, we are working on our independent 3D simulation of the Crab Nebula, which was made in collaboration with Luca Del Zanna and Andrea Mignone from the University of Torino. And we have recently reached the self-similar expansion phase of the object, and we are now working on the data reduction of our simulation. These are the first, very first results, so we hope to have many results in the next few months. And that's all. Thank you.
Thanks, Barbara. Have questions? There's Kira.
Thank you very much for your nice new approach, at least a new approach to me for emitting particles. So I have a technical question. So how did you determine the time step for the particle propagation? Is it the Raman radius divided by speed of light?
No, well, you mean these time steps here?
Yes, yes.
No, we choose to use the time step we expect to be for X-ray wisps because they have a periodicity of about 1 month, 20 days, 1 month.
Okay.
So we use this time step to evaluate the wisp intensity profiles.
Okay, maybe I misunderstand what you did. Didn't you calculate the propagation of charged particles in the simulation box?
No, well, we inject particles at the termination shock with some law for the distribution function of particles, following this assumption for the region in which we are injecting particles. So we define an a power law spectra with the suitable spectral index for X-ray or radio particles, and we only define this at the termination shock. We inject particles in the nebula. We can only follow the evolution of the energy of the particles.
Okay. Thank you very much for the explanation.
Other questions? One that I have, Barbara, is with regard to the... So you have a spectrum of radio emitting, well, radio and beyond radio flux, so therefore you have two populations of particles. You're talking about injecting them in different places. Do the relative
importance
energies or total number of particles...
They are fixed by the fitting of the spectrum.
They're fit by... Okay.
Yes.
Okay, thanks. Okay, if there are no other questions, then let's thank Barbara again.